And now, IMRO's 2023 Best Local Original News Programme, The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Good morning if you are just after joining us. So we've a busy 2 hours for you, lots of stuff to bring you, so hopefully you'll stick around, plenty of interesting items on the agenda. But just a chance to catch up on you, some of your comments and queries coming in so far this morning. We received this message. Just wondering if you could highlight this for me, please. I'm slightly in shock. I just nearly ran over a young lad, college age, that was on an electric scooter. I was pulling out of my driveway and I didn't even see him. He just came out in front of me. When I came home, another one coming at a quick speed. Luckily, I seen this one. What are the rules with these on the road? Now, I want to point out my son got a small one for Christmas. He can use it at the park or around the drive at home, but not on the road. I know we always have to be careful of motorbikes as they can be hard to see sometimes, but they do the test and pay road tax like the car drivers do. But I just can't believe the way these young people are motoring around Letterkenny. I can imagine I'm not on my own with this. Hopefully someone can shed some light on this for me. Well, I'm not sure, are the rules in place in relation to them yet? I'll have a look in relation to that. Were they on the footpath? Were they on the road? I really don't know the full circumstances of this, but this caller had a really lucky escape. Quite a college-age person. Just missed them really effectively pulling out of their driveway. And they say this is happening a lot in and around Letterkenny, but perhaps not exclusively. Any comment in relation to that? 086 60 25000. Just like to highlight the planting of the trees along the Port Road. And I do appreciate there is more important things than trees. Why and when are these trees going to be stalked or staked? Sorry. As at this stage, they'll soon be in the swilly. Or is it just another case? What odds about them? It's just taxpayers' money. A good show as usual. Thank you very much indeed for that. Well, we'll check that out. Maybe someone has some insight. New trees planted there in Letterkenny, but not staked. So obviously they are more prone to the elements. If you're in Ardravan Clinic, you will get an appointment today, and if not, tomorrow. You can't paint all health services with the same brush. They do tremendous work there, and I can't praise them enough, says a listener. Morning, Greg. Still people out walking around Letterkenny with no high-vis vests, women especially with long coats. They still have to cross the roads, even if they think it's okay when they walk on the footpaths. No consideration for car drivers at all. So car drivers... not happy this morning between scooters and people not wearing high-vis. I don't understand why people don't wear high-vis. There's some really nice, quite fashionable jackets that aren't terribly expensive that light up like the moon as soon as there's lights on them. I would have thought logically, if you want to keep yourself safe, you'd try something along those lines. I have a hospital appointment in Dublin Hospital and I'm taking the bus errand. Bus, does anyone know where I can park for free and safely in Letterkenny? This is an interesting one. Lee mentioned a similar story, if not this story, to me off air just before the programme started. Someone, and it was, I had no answer to the question. If you are getting a bus for hospital treatment or for whatever reason, and you have a car, you drive to the bus depot, as it is. You can't park there in, that's a private car park, isn't it? And you're limited to 3 hours parking there. And we can understand it's not up to a private company to provide public parking. But where, have you any tips as to where you can park your car safely and reasonably close to the pickup point for bus errand in Letterkenny? This caller has no idea where to park safely and for free in Letterkenny. Let us know. Someone out there has the answer to that. Annagree Tidy Towns are having an open night tonight in the hall in Annagree at 7 p.m. They're looking for new volunteers to help maintain standards in the village. They'd love to hear suggestions as well. Everyone's welcome. That is a public meeting, Annagree Tidy Towns at 7 p.m. in the hall in Annagree. Can I do a couple of requests as well too, just before we head towards the bingo numbers? Anne McDermott in Maharabeg in Burnfoot, happy birthday to you, Anne. From Liam and Bridget McLaughlin in Grantshire, Buncrana, and Sandra Spear in Remelton, celebrating her birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Sandra. Best wishes coming in to you from Dennis. Could you read out a birthday request, please, for me? It's for my sister, Julie Jordan in Remelton. A very happy birthday today to Julie from Remelton, with love from her sister Jacqueline and niece Tabitha. Sending you our love and hope you have a lovely day. That comes in, of course, as you can imagine, from Jacqueline. And one other comment, tongue-in-cheek here, I'd imagine. Hi, Greg. I'm happy to hear President Michael D. Higgins is making a good recovery. I think he might be out today. Could you please tell me how long he was waiting on a trolley before he got admitted into hospital? Well, I think we all know the answer to that one. I don't think you would have had a very long wait. Tall Darren on Facebook. Good morning, Greg. You said it was not permitted for you to talk about the stabbing incident in Dublin, yet you've no problem talking about bringing... the incident at the boxing event in Roscommon. Well, firstly, we can talk about the stabbing. It's the alleged perpetrator, the person charged with the crime. Once someone's arrested and charged, you can no longer talk about anything that might... And this is actually to the benefit of the general population. I'm sure no one wants to say anything that could be used in someone's defence if they are in fact guilty of a crime. Secondly, the other incident is talking about the what happened at that incident, not about the perpetrators, who's responsible, their names. That would not be allowed either. So you're mixing a couple of things up there. I appreciate your text nonetheless, but it is really quite simple. When someone's charged with a crime, you can no longer talk about their involvement or alleged involvement in that crime. But of course, you're free to talk about the incident, generally speaking, as I just have, actually, funny enough. Declan Meehan joins us on the programme now. Declan, also now an independent candidate in the upcoming local elections. Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Now, when I saw this initially, I didn't really know how to approach it. And you'll help me here, and I hope I can explain this well, in that what's happening to the people in Gaza is so, so horrendous and so catastrophic that a singing competition, almost speaking about a singing competition in the context of what's happening, feels almost like it's trivialising it. But then, obviously, to consider it further, I thought, well, we as people, or we as individuals, what else, what can we do? You know, we can't physically go over and help people, so we just can't stand back and say nothing if something apparently doesn't make sense. And it would seem that Israel's involvement for some in the Eurovision Song Contest is a validation. It's almost, you know, song washing or something along those lines. So that's why I thought it important for us to talk about. And I presume that's why you thought important to raise this issue yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Greg. I think that... it does seem somewhat trivial to talk about this, but I suppose, you know, recently we've had a discussion on the airwaves, if you like, around boycotting Israel and trying to exclude Israel from international sporting competitions. And I suppose it's in the same vein as that sort of movement and idea is, you know, they shouldn't be allowed to participate in the Eurovision Song Contest. There's two things on it that I think are important. Number one is, rightly so, when Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014, there was very little hesitation, pretty much immediate action from the European Broadcasting Union over this, where they immediately expelled Russia from the singing competition. And they said that they would not provide cultural cover for Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And yet the European Broadcasting Union has so far resisted any attempts to exclude Israel from the Eurovision Song Contest and is, in fact, itself complicit in providing cultural cover for ethnic cleansing and genocidal actions in Palestine, and most notably in Gaza. So it is very important, I think, to raise these issues. Again, it'll seem to some people like it's such a trivial thing, but I think we need to highlight the importance and the effectiveness that international sanctions and boycotts of countries in sporting arenas, economically as well, but also cultural arenas like this, can have great effect and are important to pursue.
I can't remember the exact circumstances, and I perhaps should have. I should have had a look before I spoke to you. But the last time there was a calls for Israel to be excluded from this, it went on and won it. Now, I can't remember exactly what was happening between Israel and Gaza at that time, but I do recall there were calls. They weren't as strong as this, and Israel went on and won it then for whatever reason. I'm not sure if politically across Europe things have changed, but, you know, in a way, if they were successful, it would be seen as an endorsement, I suppose, of their actions.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the concern. I think that providing a platform in this arena is, I guess, it's such a joyful event, Eurovision. It's such a bit of crack, and it brings a lot of Europeans together, and it creates that kind of idea of unity, even if it's for one night, and allowing a country that is engaged in illegal military activities, genocidal activities, just seems completely contrary to that. It's not meant to be a political event, obviously, but it has shown previously where it will draw a line and exclude countries from participating when it is perceived that that country is, where its participation is incompatible with the values of the song contest.
Yeah.
So again,
but I get that as well too. But you know, like again, this is not comparing what's happening in Gaza to a singing competition. But you know, we are watching Israel effectively collectively punish at the moment. You know, the awful events of early October. Obviously, there was going to be a reaction. But now what's happening is that this is sort of the entire population is being punished for that. In a way, does the competition not need to rise above collective punishment and sort of maybe give a voice to the many Israelis, perhaps, who aren't in favour of this? I.e., would we like to be excluded off the back of the actions of a current government for something that we aren't really necessarily or provably complicit in?
Yeah, I mean, let's look at Israel and the government that's in place there at the minute, which is voted for by, you know, the Israeli people. It's a right-wing government that props up an apartheid regime within territorial Israel, but also within occupied Palestine, whether that's in Gaza or in the West Bank. So it's not an idea of collective punishment. The kind of principles of boycott, divest and sanction, the BDS movement, learns from the experience of the exact same principles being applied to apartheid South Africa. So South Africa previously was excluded from sporting events, cultural events, etc., obviously with sanctions and economic sanctions thrown there in there as well. And you obviously had the very famous Dunn's Door strike in solidarity with that movement. And this is a continuation and a learning from that to try and I suppose, apply the same principles and to try and put pressure to, in some ways, try to create a situation where the government of Israel, in this case, becomes a pariah on the international stage in the same way that Russia has become that since the invasion of Ukraine in 2014. So it's about creating those opportunities. What we have at the minute is a staggering amount of hypocrisy from Western leaders when it comes to Israel and the treatment of Israel on the international stage and the support for Israel and the lack thereof for the people of Palestine. So it's about also using this as an opportunity to call out the double standards, that the browner you are as a people, the less rights you have and the less support you have from many Western governments. So it is, again, drawing that line between when Russia invaded Ukraine, there was no question of boycott, divest and sanctions from across the international community in the West. And now when Israel is doing the same, and in some instances worse afflictions or breaches of international law on its attack on Gaza and ongoing attacks in the West Bank, we see really complicit silence from most European and Western.
They have changed the words. That the original song from Israel seemed to reference the attacks in October. The wording is going to be changed, but obviously with everything you've been said, that's not going to make a pick of difference. No. There are some people pointing out, so I'll put it to you, that, you know, lots of people of all different types of people love the Eurovision, but often it can be sort of a celebration particularly... You know, maybe reflective or supportive of the LGBTQ community. And some are saying, well, you know, you couldn't have that type of a celebration in a pre-war, presumably, Gaza, because they wouldn't recognise the rights of many of those that may enjoy or watch or take part in the Eurovision.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a huge difference between recognising the rights of LGBT people and recognising the humanity of all people. There's over 30,000 people, the vast majority of them civilians, almost half of them children, that have been murdered by Israel in Gaza over the past number of months. There's a further 17,000 missing, which we can only assume, considering the state of Gaza over the past few months, that they are also dead. So I think it's kind of disingenuous to use that. I think that a lot of people have kind of used the pink washing of Israel to kind of show that because they're a tolerant country in the Middle East, that you don't need to delve any deeper into that in terms of treatment of LGBT issues or people or whatever else. But at the same time, Israel is a genocidal state. It is an apartheid regime. It is illegally occupying and settling Palestine and has been doing so for over 70 years. So I don't think the comparison is helpful. I think that the focus needs to remain on basic humanity and respect for international humanitarian law.
In a way, I think it is helpful to some extent because it shows that this is so important that it perhaps rises above, you know, a person's individual concerns. And that says, all right, okay, well, maybe that's the case, but I'm actually thinking here of the wider situation because we are all people, we're all human beings, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that's really important to point out in this is that Israel has been taking part in the Eurovision since the 1970s. It's a country that is not in Europe. And Australia has been admitted in recent years to the Eurovision as well. In some ways, you can see that, you know, if Tunisia or if Palestine or if Morocco or if any other Mediterranean region, non-European country applied for membership to the European Broadcasting Union, they would not be allowed or given the opportunity to do so. And that has happened in the past. So it is in recognition of this almost kind of white supremacist colonial state that Israel was ever granted admission to the European Broadcasting Union and the Eurovision in the first place. So the whole kind of thing is based on hypocrisy. And this continues today when you see the double standard, how Russia has been treated and Israel is treated. And both should be treated as pariah states in relation to their illegal invasions and occupations.
Yeah, it makes the entire, obviously it's actually just really, really complicated now because Israel probably will continue to take part. And it is instantly, I know they want to avoid politicize the competition, but it's unavoidable. They are actually in a very difficult position because to exclude Israel at this point sets a precedent because then there becomes a bar as to what's going on in a particular country. You know, do you exclude them from this competition? But the precedent was set with Russia and I suppose with Belarus in the past as well. So there's great minds here. They're going to have to suck it up and come up with something.
I think it's important to kind of point out as well, Greg, that calls for boycotting the Eurovision aren't just in Ireland, Finland, Iceland, Denmark and Norway. There's huge movements within those countries from both the winning artists and their public broadcasters to boycott if Israel are allowed to participate. And that's what this movement in Ireland is calling RTE to just simply say, we're not taking part if Israel is taking part. They shouldn't be given a platform. They shouldn't be given cultural cover, which is to use the exact language of the European Broadcasting Union itself.
All right. But at the same time, you know, RTE are asking people not to wear emblems or fly flags in one particular or another for not to take a particular stance. So I can't see them taking this leap. But listen, your job is to make that call and it's up to them whether they heed it or not. Not your job, but your feelings. Okay, thanks, Declan. Appreciate it. Take care of yourself. All right, what do you think? 086 60 25,000. Should Ireland pull out of the Eurovision Song Contest if Israel is a part of it? Let us know your feelings on 086 60 25,000. We're taking a different tact, but staying on the issue of the war in the Middle East. James, a former Irish soldier in the UN's with us on the programme now. James, how are you getting on? James, are you there?
I'm good.
Okay, sorry.
You hear me, Greg?
Loud and clear. I just had the wrong button pressed. Okay. James, for a lot of people, a generation or those of us who, to be honest with you, a lot of people, their knowledge is just when the media starts talking about something, and their opinion often is the way that information is presented to them by certain parts of the media. That is just a fact. But everyone is becoming aware of what's happening in the Middle East. Now, for a lot of people, it all started on October 7th. But obviously, with your experience and your knowledge, you would be well aware that this type of activity from Israel goes back a long way.
Oh, absolutely, Greg. I mean, my time, I was in the Middle East in the sort of late 70s and done about 4.5 years altogether with the UN, different periods, obviously, finished the last time, it had been 93. And all during that, you know, conflict with the Israelis invading Lebanon in 75 was the start of it. And then, but the Palestinians were pushed out, of course, as people know, 1948 was the first big push out from Palestine. when Israel was sort of been formed. That's with the French and the Americans and the British behind all that type of stuff, as we know. Anybody that's not sure of that history, because it's easy looked up and easy checked out. But Israel have always been a force that, and you can, people can understand it as well. Obviously, everything sort of stems back to the Holocaust when during the Second World War. We always seem to go back to that. And people would say, well, I mean, so that's 100 years ago or whatever. But, you know, that's what it's like, I suppose, in a lot of countries when there's conflict. They always have, people will always get a reason as to why things are the way they are. And that gives them justification for maybe doing certain things. And, of course, what happened on the 7th of October when these guys invaded Israel and took away hostages and killed maybe 1,400 or 1,500 people, all that adds to it. But there's an old saying, Greg, and I'm sure people realise it, if you poke the bear too much, sometimes it is going to fight back. And that's really what happens.
We saw post-October 7th, James, some senior-ranking Israelis, you know, referring to Palestinians as animals. From the history of your being there and what you've seen, that probably is not a new sentiment, is it? They probably don't view them as humans.
No, absolutely not.
Certainly not in the same level.
And as you were talking to the guy Decton before, there's an awful lot of Israelis who have in no way would want to be doing what's happening at all today. But again, when you have a right-wing government, and sadly, the Western world, Britain, France, even Germany today, and of course America being the big one, the only people who could really stop a lot of things happening in the Middle East, any part of it, is probably America, because they have the veto when it comes to the UN. A lot of people don't realise, Greg, that there's 192 or 93 countries, I think. Ireland's now part of the UN, and there's only five voices that actually matter. Do people realise that, I wonder?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Russia, China, America, France, and Britain. And if any one of those countries says nothing, something's going to be vetoed, not going through, that's it. Doesn't matter if the other 180-odd people say that they agree with whatever the UN says, but once one of these countries veto that, it doesn't happen. And that's a massive problem as well, of course.
The some would say that this conversation is anti-Semitic, that but from my perspective anyway, I actually really don't care about anyone's background or what have you. I'm only observing. I couldn't condemn enough what happened at the start of October, and I'm sure you'd join me in that.
Completely
unacceptable.
Can't.
It is absolutely horrendous. But also, one can't ignore that over 30,000, mostly women and children, have been slaughtered since then. And even though some of the big names that you talk of, the likes of the US and what have you, that they stood and armed Israel, even they now at this point are saying, right, enough is enough. We need an immediate ceasefire. We need to get food and medicine into the 2.3 million innocent civilians that are currently displaced. I don't see that as being anti-Semitic, me personally, because I'm only speaking of what I'm seeing, and I'm only speaking of the decisions it seems that those in power in Israel are making. I don't care if they're Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, atheists. That doesn't frame my way of thinking. I don't know about you, James.
No, I mean, it doesn't matter who the people are. I mean, if there's people, it's the people in control. Politics, Greg, politics worldwide can be. I don't know, I find politics worldwide, when I have a great interest in it, and it's very fickle at times, but certain people, it's all to do, again, I suppose it's all power and all this type of stuff, and the might of the West is a massive thing. And again, Israel, being where it is, surrounded by Muslim countries, I suppose they're always under the cosh that, you know, people are always against them and all that. But they have good relations with Jordan next door to them. They have good relations with Egypt. Saudi Arabia was in the talks there lately, but that's kind of gone a bit haywire since all this other thing started.
What about, James, just about the role in Hamas in this, in that Hamas's tactics is to embed themselves amongst the population they claim to be defending. You know, you can argue the toss about whether tunnels are being used or not, or whether hospitals are actually being used as command centres or not. But the reality is, you know, Hamas has held on to these hostages. And perhaps if they'd given up those hostages, if they had committed to disarm or something along those lines, that a lot of the death we're talking of and that's being blamed universally on Israel could have been avoided as well. You know, there's there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of conversation about Hamas's role in this now at this point. Is that a fair enough argument, do you think?
Well, that's a fair argument, yeah. I mean, but when you say, when people say they're embedded, I've been in Gaza a couple of times, and like Gaza is a tiny dot on the face of the earth where there's over 2 million people in it. People haven't room to turn, haven't room to drive a car in it, possibly in places. When you do drive in through it, I mean, you must remember Gaza. There's five main ways in and out of Gaza controlled by the Israelis, and there's one controlled by the Egyptians. That one, the one that's mostly talked about these days, the Rafah Gates. But remember, there's no work. People just sit around all day, and it's actually frightening to drive and walk through it because you feel there's eyes on you all the time. But in saying that, the people themselves, like anywhere in the world, like even Lebanon, that people just want to get on with their lives. They're not this political. It's a bit. I often refer to these things, Greg, and think back to our own problems here in what we call the north of Ireland, the six counties next door to us. But you know, you have people who just want to get on with things, whether they're Protestants or Catholic or anything else, but they're not allowed to because there's people out there that want to keep the
kettle on the boil. The only difference between that metaphor, though, basically, though, is that, you know, with agreement we can live together. The problem, particular problem, seems to be is that I'm not sure Israel is content at all now living with their neighbours, or vice versa. I know Israel is trying to stamp out Hamas, but at the same time also perhaps they're breeding, even a more militant army that they're going to have to fight into the future. With a two-state solution, can those two parties coalesce there ever?
It'll be very, very hard, Gray, because when there's so many people getting killed, in both sides, but there's so many people getting killed now at the minute in Gaza. I mean, family members are going to turn against them, people who never really had any interest in maybe joining Hamas. It's like all these things, that the more you put the pressure on, the more people are going to turn against it, and the future generations are always going to be there thinking back. So, look, I'm just thinking back when in Lebanon in 1982, I was there. That was the summer of 82. The Israelis invaded and they pushed the PLO at that time, Yasser Arafat and these people, all back as far as Beirut. And eventually they got an agreement to send them across to Libya, Morocco, and Algeria. As I'm sure you remember all that. Maybe you're not old enough, Greg, to remember all that.
No, I read about it, but I wasn't old enough at the time, yeah.
But the Israelis at that time had a force. There was a Christian army in southern Lebanon, and they controlled about 6 kilometres from the Israeli border into Lebanon. And we as UNIFIL were the next end between the Christian forces and the PLO. But the UNIFIL mandate was actually to patrol along the Israeli border. But America passed resolution after resolution, the UN stopped all that. But when they got to Beirut that time, they allowed, I'll tell you who was, the Minister for Defence that time was Ariel Sharon. God rest him, he's dead now. And Ariel Sharon was the Minister for Defence, and they allowed the Christian militia, as they were known as, to go into two refugee camps in Beirut, known as Shabla and Shatila. I don't know if you ever even remember or even read these things. And they slaughtered whatever PLO people, the Palestinians that were left, old men, women and children. Different figures at that time came out, but a good Western journalist who lives in Beirut reckoned that about 2,000 to 2,500 people were slaughtered, just for the sake of it, basically. And that was all under the control of the Israeli army at that time. So, you know, when those things happen, and then you see other things happening at the 7th of October, you know, you'd wonder sometimes what it all amounts to, or when is it going to stop, or how much does it take to make these things stop? Because it's nothing new about a lot of these things, absolutely nothing new about it at all, you know.
Yeah, and the problem is, and this is for all people, because, those living in Israel are also have been, you know, lots of rockets and what have you going to Israel as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's what the solution is. You see, that's the problem. What is the solution? And this will be the ripples of this will be felt across the world, be it this year, next year, or the other year, because you know there are the anger of some will be taken out on countries that seem to be complicit in this. If you know what I'm
absolutely.
Talking about.
Absolutely, and you're talking there about the Americans now calling for a ceasefire, but the other thing is we're now getting to election time and an awful lot of Palestinians or Arabs who live, I mean, America would be very heavily populated with people from the Middle East, and they're certainly going to be on the side of the Palestinians rather than the Israelis. So big vote catching as well. So you know, like, again, it's politics in that sense. You know, it's, I don't know, it's hard to know, Greg, where it'll all end.
Yeah.
Well, but in relation, Greg, when I mentioned a few minutes ago about what happened in the north of Ireland, or we have our ceasefire and we have our government, and our government is set up like the biggest party gets the first minister. You know, there's three parties there now, get all ministers in the Alliance Party, they have a few ministers, and then Geoffrey Donaldson's party has a few ministers. Mm-hmm. But that's not a new concept. Lebanon, when it was set up by the French back in the early days, even today, the Christians always get the president. The Sunni Muslims are allowed the prime minister, and the Shiite Muslims are allowed what we sort of refer to as the Speaker of the House. So it's been taken from that type of system that was set up in Lebanon years ago.
Yeah.
That's how they try to keep all the parties, I suppose, happy. And But like the few fallouts we had in Northern Ireland over the years, there have been massive fallouts in Lebanon as well between them, and Parliament has been suspended. But that's where that actually comes from. So it's not a new thing or a new concept just because it happened in Northern Ireland.
All right, James, listen, I wish we had the solutions to it.
I know, listen, you could talk for the next week on this stuff. And
listen,
whatever.
I appreciate your insight. Thank you very much indeed. That's James, a former Irish soldier in the UN, and his take on what's happening there. 086 60 25,000. Now, this Friday, you go to the polls. How many of you will? I don't know. I honestly think the turnout for the referenda will struggle to get above 40%. I really do. And it depends who's most motivated to go out and vote. If 60%, say, for instance, are going like, I don't understand it, or it's not making sense to me, or I don't know which way to go, are they going to be motivated to go out and vote one way or other? But there are going to be those that are very motivated to go out and vote, and that's going to swing it one way or other. I don't know which way it will go. I suspect which way it will go. I certainly have a sense which way it will go up here anyway, but that's on Friday. The count starts on Saturday. And we're going to broadcast live from the count centre for an hour on Saturday, just to get a sense of which way this county has voted, which way the country is going. And also sort of, we have a great panel lined up to sort of talk about maybe the apathy towards it or the confusion about it. We'll be more freer to speak about it at that point. That's on Saturday. So that's going to be an hour-long show between 1 and 2, I believe it is, from the Cant Centre Live, all being well. So you'll be able to listen and watch that on Saturday, and we should get a good sense, because there's not going to be a lot of votes to count, and it's quite simple. It's yes or no, isn't it? So we should actually really get a good sense of which way it's going. So tune in for that if you like your politics. John's going to be with us, and John McAteer and a few others as well, just to go through the campaign, how it was, you know all the ins and outs, but anyway. So that's on Saturday, live from the Cant Centre. We can't speak about it after Wednesday. I think we're going to speak to Padre Tobin of Aintu tomorrow, and we're going to speak to a yes, yes. This is where it gets complicated, because there are people who are yes, no, and no, yes, with their own opinions as well. But we've been timing the contributions from various contributors, as we have to. So we're going to have a no, no conversation tomorrow, yes, yes on Tuesday, and then after that Wednesday, no more speaking about it. So you go to the polls on Friday. What will the turnout be? I actually could see it being mid-30s. I really think it could be very, very low. From the people I'm talking to, a lot of shoulder shrugging, as if, you know, well, what is it about? What is, you know, maybe one half of it, one part of it's more easier to articulate and understand than another. But sure, we'll see. What do you think? What do you think the turnout will be? As I say, I think it'll be low. Now, the IABI... The Boxing Association released a press release saying it is aware of a serious incident during the final stages of the 2024 National Boy Four Championship quarterfinals in Castlereagh, County Roscommon, on Friday evening. That such an incident could occur at a children's sporting event is abhorrent and is roundly condemned by every member of the Irish boxing family. Gardaí are investigating, of course, the final 2 days or the next 2 days of boxing, which was scheduled to take place over the weekend, was cancelled as a result. If you saw the footage, very, very troubling. Peter O'Donnell is president of the Donegal County Boxing Board and was emceeing at that event on Friday night. Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, Greg.
Thanks for chatting to us. The next fight involved a young man from Dunfanaghy. This incident happened just as he was about to enter. So this is a children's competition. Can you, as you remember, outline how it was clear something was something seriously going wrong?
Well, it happened so quickly, Greg, that nobody realised. Like, we seen a man running up the hall with a chair, shielding himself with a chair, and a man behind him with a sword and a machete. You know, it was terrible, terrible to see. You know, there are no words can describe what happened in Castlereagh and Roscommon on Friday night. The championships for championship boxing for 14-year-old girls and boys. Like, it was total mayhem to what had happened, you know. And it could have been a lot worse, because there were 30 contests down for decision on Friday night. 28 had been boxed, and we were going into the 29th contest when this incident happened. And by that time, about a third of the bumper crowd that was on earlier had dwindled out and left, like, you know, so it would give these men a clear run through the stadium, like, to get the man they were looking for, you know.
I mean, there's no place in any part of society for an attack like this, but for it to happen at a children's boxing event is all the more disgusting.
That's right, Craig. You know, and they see masked men entering at their a championship boxing for 14-year-olds with machetes and slash hooks and swords after a man. Like, he took a very day. It was bad timing to do that. You know, these thugs, they should never get away with this, you know. And it has ruined the name of boxing as well. And the bottom line here, Craig, would be that it made all the headlines there in the Sunday papers and one thing and another, usually in the national papers. But at the end of the day, it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with boxing. Like, this is a family feud between rival traveller
guys. We'll not go into that. We don't know who's we don't know who's responsible, Peter. But I understand. Did it feel that that it was going to escalate? Like, I'm trying to picture what it must have been like in there. When you see these type of weapons, which can cause incredible damage to someone, did it feel for a moment, Peter, that it was going to be a massacre, effectively?
That's what it looked like, Craig. There was one man following this man up that was running for the chair, the man that was the victim, the man they were after. And we were on the stage, six officials on the stage at the championships. I was doing the MC. We were up on the stage, and then the next thing, three masked men, armed as well, ran across the floor up the stage, like, after this man, to meet up with him as well. You know, there was four, there could have been five, but there were four men in total all together, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and it was really frightening, that really frightening.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I seen a young girl, I would say she was no more than 4 or 5 years of age, wrapped around her mother, and the squeeze of her, like a wee girl with a pink coat on her, I could still see her. You know, nightmare stuff, like, to see this here in boxing. Anybody to see, and it'll definitely do damage, you know.
What happens next? Because obviously, you know, the professional game and the amateur game are separate, but are seen as the same. We had, obviously, it's only very recently that we're starting to see professional boxing events happening in Ireland again at scale because of security concerns and issues. And now we're seeing this at an amateur boxing tournament. It's hard to see how it could be scheduled going forward and something like this being guaranteed not to happen. Again, it's the kids actually really here that are missing out. It's another bad news story for Irish boxing.
Yes, that has nothing to do with boxing, Greg. And you can't, you can't look into the future, see what's going to happen next. You don't know when these things is going to happen. Like, there's no man can forecast this, you know. something hopefully we would never ever see again, like, you know, or any child would want to see, you know. And it'll be a loss to boxing because there are a lot of parents there that, you know, and they'll not want their children back at boxing or one thing and another after seeing this year because they don't know when this is going to escalate again or happen again, you know. There are no guarantee, was it, you know.
And as you talked of the panic in the venue, I mean, a lot of family would have been watching the stream. Now, I think the cameraman turning the camera to catch the events was important, actually, in terms of, you know, the investigation and what have you. But I can only imagine what it must have been like watching at home and the panic to make sure that everybody was okay. Because if you just watched that footage, you wouldn't know what had happened beforehand, what had happened afterwards, what the motivation would be. So I'd say it was an absolute shocker, not only for those in attendance, but also those watching the stream.
That's you right there, Greg. That's just what it was, you know, because that it was getting streamed live. The whole program was getting streamed live. It was a 3-day event, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday. But it finished up on Sunday evening, the finals. And, you know, it was over the 3 days and it was all streamed live. Like, and that man was working for Roscommon, some crowd in Roscommon, the man that was streaming it live. Like, I don't know if it was the Castle Ree Boxing Club or what, but everybody has seen it, and it must be terrifying for anybody to think that they're, most of the young boys, most of the Donegal boxers, Greg, we had 14 boxers all together up there, 14 recently crowned Ulster champions from Donegal, 8 boys and 6 girls competing, and most of them were on the semi-finals on Saturday. So they were all there Friday because the weigh-in on Saturday morning was from 8 o'clock to 9, so they'd have been there early to get weighed in and all. They make their weight on Saturday morning. They were all there on Friday night, and the natural thing that they do would be come to the arena on Friday night to see who they would be boxing, who wants a quarter final at their weight, who they would be boxing the next day, what he or she would be like, and one thing and another, you know. So there was a lot of Donegal people there, you know, parents and coaches and one thing and another, you know.
Yeah, and we're getting contacts from a lot of them too. I hope it hasn't. Thankfully, no one physically harmed that was down from Donegal, but you just wonder of the emotional impacts of this. Young children should never be subject to anything like this at all. Peter, listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Peter O'Donnell there, President of the Donegal County Boxing Board. And as I say, we've contacts coming in from parents and guardians of young ones that were taking part in that competition. We'll get to those comments and more after the news at 11.